It was a nighttime race, really kind of dangerous track already because it's very dusty. So when people go off or put two in the dirt, as they say, it kicks up a lot of dust. And I was going through a very fast section of the track. It was super dusty. It's kind of like driving through snow. Like you can't see more than 2 feet in front of you. And you're going at a very, very fast pace. So I kind of turned where I should have turned or thought I should have turned, ended up going off the track. And actually four cars were involved in this accident.
Wow.
I ended up spinning. Once I kind of realized, hey, like I stopped the car and I realized the first thing you got to do is like, you just figure out where you are. Like, are you on track or off track? And once I realized I was on the track, I immediately look to my left and I see headlights coming at me.
What's up, everybody? It's me, Armand, back again with another episode. Today's guest, we have Derek Pokoroba. He's the founder and chief technology officer over at Trident Group. They're an end-to-end cybersecurity company. And Derek has seen and been through many cybersecurity events, the dangerous ones, the bad ones, the ones that I can't tell you more about, or else I'd have to kill you. Trident Group's grown to over 50 employees in the past few years through a pandemic and all sorts of other ups and downs, and they've been a really fun company to watch. In its free time, Derek likes racing cars, and we talk about what it's like to go over 100 miles per hour to be bumper to bumper to other cars inches away, racing down the track. This episode was really fun to film. Derek is someone I've known for a long time. He's a really awesome dude. Super cool. Lots to talk about. Lots to learn. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
Derek.
Work hard, play hard. Hello. Hello. How's it going, sir?
It's going great. How's it going for you?
It's going really well, actually. Busy, but good busy. So I can't really complain too much.
That's right. You are in an industry where you quite literally never sleep. Lot keeping you up at night. And yeah, great to have you. Great to talk. You are the founder and CTO of Trident Group, which is a cybersecurity company, a very active industry these days. You want to speak to TG a little and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Started the company a few years ago with a couple of friends of mine. It's been an interesting journey and learned a lot over the last few years, and company's been growing. And as you kind of mentioned, you know, cybersecurity is something that's really top of mind for a lot of people right now. You know, sadly, it's kind of all over the news, whether it's, you know, war related, and not to be too political with things, you know, it's been very politicized right now. You know, cyber warfare is pretty real. It's here. And I think people and companies see that now. So it's a very interesting industry we're in, and don't think it's going to slow down really anytime too soon. So,
yeah. And I know during the last kind of time the market took a downturn, the pandemic, you guys actually ended up thriving because of the nature of the industry and how it's very active, especially in down markets. The bad guys are very active. How did that play out in the pandemic, and how do you guys expect to do that now?
Yeah, it was definitely a scary time, right? I think we were all in very uncertain times and didn't know what we were going to do. But, you know, luckily my partners and I were very strong-willed and stubborn to survive, if you will. So we kind of just said, hey, if we can get through this, we can get through anything, and kind of doubled down and really shifted our focus. And to your point, you know, some things did kind of stall, but other things really opened up. And our goal was just to be there for a lot of these customers and just help out as much as we can. And in the end, we got a lot of positivity out of that and a lot of loyal fans, if you will. So it was pretty cool to see. Proud to say, you know, we didn't lay anybody off during the pandemic. We actually hired people. So we kind of used that to our advantage and said, hey, if we can get through this, we want to really kind of grow the business. And it's been happening ever since. And, you know, barring any crazy recession things, you know, we're kind of planning to do the same thing and just keeping grinding away. It's all we can do.
Yeah. And that's huge. The fact that you guys were growing and hiring people in this time when, you know, mid, early 2020, 2021, it was very difficult, very uncertain for everyone.
Yeah, it was kind of almost like unheard of. And, you know, we were very big about communicating, you know, our messaging and culture to our team. So we had, you know, weekly stand-up calls, you know, hey, how's everybody doing? If people needed time off for kind of mental health days and things like that, we were there for people. We didn't want to add, you know, stress to an already kind of complex, stressful environment. So proud to say, I think we did pretty well in this whole thing. And, you know, it's all we can do is just keep kind of moving forward. And, you know, fortunately that we take our culture very, very serious here. And that's been a huge key factor for our success, I feel, and very much ingrained in our DNA when we started this company. So I'm pretty proud to see that and see it pay off.
Yeah, culture is really important. And now you guys have grown up to, what is it, 50 or so employees?
Yeah, I think we're north of 50. I don't know the exact numbers, but you know, in that 55-ish yeah. range, give or take. So you know, from where it was a few years ago to now has been pretty amazing journey to see this thing grow where, you know, we'd all fit in one room in one state. And now we're, you know, across multiple states and multiple different people and time zones now. So pretty rewarding to see that stuff kind of happen and grow, not gonna lie.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Trident Group started in a closet. Fun fact, the three founders together in one room, all making calls.
Literally, yeah, you know, a small little closet. So that was from the early days to, you know, the offices now to being kind of nationwide is pretty impressive. And even to have customers that are worldwide, is pretty exciting to see. So,
yeah. And so how did you instill that culture into the DNA from the very beginning? Because I know that was something important to the three of you starting it, but how did you manage to hold on to that and keep it growing as the company grows itself?
It's hard, right? I mean, I think a lot of books you read, a lot of people talk about, hey, culture, and it's easy to control when it's, you know, everybody can fit in one room and you can kind of keep preaching it. But with work from home, as you kind of shift to this different mindset, it's very hard, right? So for us, it's, you know, whether it's kind of, you know, extra days off that we kind of give to our customers, you know, mental kind of stress days, you know, kind of half days off here and there. We'll try to do, you know, now that people are kind of coming back and more welcome to meeting again in person, you know, doing happy hours again, lunches, dinners, team building events, you know, we're looking at ways that we can do team building events virtually. So how do we kind of keep the people engaged and, you know, just kind of have that positivity. And I think our sometimes repetitive messaging drives people crazy. For the people that have been there for a few years, but they also are our biggest advocates. And I love when we like hire somebody new and one of our more seasoned people kind of preaches the messaging without us saying it. So it's pretty cool to see that get ingrained and instilled. And I think all we can do is kind of continue to plant those seeds and hopefully they, you know, grow and flourish and kind of grow on their own, even if we don't necessarily say those things directly. So,
yeah. That's really awesome. And now when you were first starting, why cybersecurity? Like what was the problem that you set out to solve at that time?
Yeah, a couple of things on that actually. So I've always kind of been fascinated with, you know, cybersecurity. My background's always been kind of IT, that, you know, engineer nerd, so to speak. And, you know, so I was always kind of fascinated with it. And I worked at various companies over the years in different sizes and, you know, saw that they didn't always fit the right need for the market. And sometimes I think we're leaving things on the table. And that was kind of the whole premise of the company was saying, hey, you know, I think we can do something a little bit better. I think we can give a better, you know, what we call like our kind of white glove approach to things and just being a better advocate for people and, you know, much more of a prescribe first and then, or, you know, diagnose first and prescribe versus just saying, hey, go take these pills and move on. It's like, well, let's figure out what's actually wrong. You know, using a kind of a doctor analogy, like what's really wrong with you first, then go actually try to fix it versus just saying, here, go buy a bunch of things you may or may not need. And then with cybersecurity, you know, it's not going to go away. It's top of mind. It's, you know, unfortunately, this forever thing we're living in. And, you know, people are so hyper-connected now and it's a very scary real thing. And I really think we can, you know, have this impact to really protect people, protect businesses, you know, protect other companies from going out of business. Can be extremely costly if you do fall victim to a cyber event. And I think most of us know either someone that's been a part of fraud or a victim to fraud, identity theft, you know, those are all various forms of, you know, cybersecurity incidents. So yeah, that was a big driver for us.
Nice. And I like from your engineering background, I recently found out that you were like an, was it SE, I believe, before starting Trident Group? It was
solutions
SE
engineer,
on the network side. I always knew you as the cybersecurity guy. I had no idea. Was this something you kind of learned along the way? Like you saw the need for security and then you dove in, or did you have some sort of background and then managed to transfer that over?
Yeah, good question. So I kind of grew up on the, you know, what you call like the networking side there. But you know, usually when you're building out these complex networks, you know, security should, it's not always often part of these things baked up front. But you know, you're always tasked with this, you know, compromise of making things easy to use, but also being very secure. So it's kind of this constant cat and mouse game and, you know, things like that. So I worked with various, you know, networking security equipment over the years, and I've always had a fascination for it and was able to kind of fortunately pick things up, you know, fairly easy and kind of look at things and be able to kind of break down complex things into a more, you know, maybe human digestible format to kind of help offer and sell the solution, so to speak, and translate that to a human form. So, you know, cybersecurity has always been kind of part of me. And I think even when you're younger, you're kind of a quote unquote hacker, so to speak, trying different things and breaking things and realizing, wow, that's kind of cool. You can, you know, trick the logic of something. So it's always kind of been in there, but there's definitely people out there that are way, way, way smarter than me at this type of stuff. And that's why we hire those people and turn them loose to help better protect our customers out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And something you said actually is really interesting. You said trick the logic. How does that play into a hacker? Like what a hacker does? Because it kind of makes sense in my, like the pieces are there, but can you connect the dots?
Yeah. So probably the best way to describe it is like, if you can, you know, like one of my favorite forms of this is called social engineering, right? Where think of it like the whole con man, con person, you know, scenario where maybe I trick you. Yeah, exactly. Where maybe I trick you into using a fake credit card or buying something that doesn't exist or selling you something that's not quite built yet, you know, or
clicking on a link.
Yeah, calling you, telling you I'm from the IRS and you owe $10,000 back taxes, go buy gift cards and give them to me, right? So like those are kind of forms I think that people have seen. So you're tricking a human logic, which is one form of it, which is still, you know, a form of social engineering. But then like in computer terms, you're maybe tricking the logic of maybe the way a program behaves, or if you can maybe modify the code or insert your own code and get the software to do different things, it might give you access to maybe things you shouldn't have. So if you think about it, maybe an example might be if you're like a healthcare company and you have all these, you know, personal records or healthcare records, and I can maybe trick your database into giving me the information back, even though I might not have access, that's a form of, you know, kind of hacking, if you will, and you know, getting things to do a unexpected result than what they're intended for.
It's very
cool because, you know, like with engineering, it's kind of like, it works or it doesn't. So you're kind of somewhat bending the rules of sometimes, you know, applications and programming and, you know, hardware. I mean, like you can be tricking hardware and tricking doors to open locks and, you know, picking locks as a form of cybersecurity and things like that. So lots of really neat subfields within cybersecurity for people to get into.
Yeah. They say it a lot. It's an umbrella term. There's so much that goes into cybersecurity. Kind of my understanding of, you know, the difference between someone who's a network engineer versus security engineers, the network engineer is trying to keep the business going forward versus the security engineer is trying to reduce the risk of the business. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes it's a very different type of person. And you see some sort of like internal clashes happen.
It is. And there's always this kind of, you know, joking cat and mouse game where networking people get blamed first if something doesn't work. Security's just their goal to lock it down and make it not work. So got to have this compromise of, hey, you know, like we obviously want our applications to work and people to use our software, but, you know, you got to have it secure too. So I think, you know, the good news from what I've seen is the last several years, a good kind of merge of those teams. Often they can be the same people, sometimes they're different teams. But the good news I think is because cybersecurity is so relevant now, you know, like the quote unquote networking and security people are generally speaking, playing better together, I think. So, the goal is to, you know, not have breaches, and because at the end of the day, nobody wants to lose their job, right? So they want to do what's right for their employer, hopefully, and not make things too wide open. But yeah, there's always that kind of constant cat and mouse struggle of first to blame, proven guilty until innocent type of a thing.
Yeah, no one wants a RGE. That what was it?
That's
that guy
right.
said resume tearing.
Yeah, you don't want those. And then, but fortunately, they do happen though, and they're luckily far and few between. But I've seen a few of those happen over my career, and seen some things implode, and it's not pretty. Let's put it that way.
For those wondering, an RGE is a resume generating event. Whenever something so bad happens, you got to get that resume ready because you're getting out.
Yeah, usually, hopefully it's not something that, you know, you self-inflicted. And, you know, that's another good thing too, is, you know, for us, we try to build that culture of, hey, you know, like mistakes happen, you know, let's own up to it. Let's do what's right. You know, our big thing is, you know, mistakes are okay as long as you don't keep making the same ones over and over again, then it becomes, you know, potentially an issue. So, you know, we want to have that culture of always learning, you know, that kind of white glove approach, and, you know, mistakes happen, communicate often, communicate up, you know, because we are like a team at the end of the day. So that helps us kind of going back to your culture question, kind of instill that safety net that people feel safe enough to, I don't want to say make like major mistakes, but, you know, again, mistakes happen. You know, I've made plenty in my career and still make them all the time. So as long as we kind of learn from them, that's like the most important thing. So,
yeah, I think that's really important as well. I've always believed that a big part of growth comes from being comfortable with making those mistakes. And if you are constantly worried about losing your job at any slip up, that's definitely going to be a very stressful and very difficult. Slow growth happens there. But at the same time, it's like, how do you balance the fact that you like little slip ups, you know, you can't really afford that in the security world. So it's definitely an interesting spot. And it's good to see that the culture exists there.
Yeah, you got to have a strong management to kind of back you up. Because to your point, you know, like mistakes can happen, and sometimes small mistakes can be very costly. So having the right kind of upper management buy-in to support you and back you up and let you learn and fail, I think is very important. I've been fortunate over the years to have some really good mentors that have trained me, and I've made some pretty, you know, dumb moves over the years. And it's like, man, like I'll never do those again. And you definitely learn from them quickly. So,
yeah, I imagine that, I don't know too much into the coding world, but a typo in coding is not as good as, or it's not like a typo in an email is not as bad as.
Yeah, there you go.
In coding.
Email is no big deal. You might just have some grammar police come yell at you. A typo in code means something may not work, or it may break something else, and you're pulling your hair out. Already stressful enough.
So speaking of stress, I know you've been a part of helping some pretty big instances that have happened out there without getting, you know, sharing too much detail. But I want to talk more about the handling of that stress. So whenever you're in like this critical event, like something really catastrophic happens to a company and they ask you to come in and like, we've been hacked, we need your help to solve this problem. How has that impacted you, you know, personally and mentally, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's a very tough situation, you know. So like in IT in general, I think, you know, those of us that have been kind of engineers have been through plenty of stressful scenarios over the years, whether you're doing like a cutover and something doesn't go right, responding to an outage, like we're almost trained, you know, from the beginning to jump up at 2 a.m. and handle a like an emergency call. And it becomes kind of almost second nature once you do a few of these. But in a cybersecurity incident, it's even probably more so stressful. So really our goal, like, you know, depending when we're brought in during the whole cycle of things, if it's early enough, is to help coach and walk people through, okay, here's what should happen. We kind of act as these, you know, mentors and guiders, if you will, or, you know, kind of like liaisons to help, you know, run the scenarios, okay, understand what they should be doing, you know, how do we maybe contain the breach first, then work on cleanup, you know, then work on data collection, and kind of really just be there to assure the people like, hey, like it's going to be bumpy. This is going to suck for maybe a week or two or even longer in some cases, but, you know, we can definitely get through it. You know, I'm always a believer that you can pretty much solve any technology problem with enough, you know, time, effort, and money, depending on how you look at that. It just takes, you know, two of the three essentially. So like those things, you know, will come back online, but really having that kind of calm, clear-headed balance, I think from the experience side of things, becomes really important, you know, because your engineers can be stressed out, their team can be stressed out, people are running on fumes. I've seen plenty of tension over time where people are just so tired and they kind of just, you know, get combative because, you know, they're just tired and your body just shuts down. So knowing when to unplug, knowing when to escalate is all just super critical. And it comes with, you know, really just experience in handling these events. And, you know, you have to have a level headed because like, if you start to panic, then your team panics and the whole thing kind of falls apart. And just, you know, there's some things in life that are just out of your control, and just focus on what you can control and, you know, try to drive the outcome and go from there.
And now you're like, as far as I look back, as you're saying that to the people I know that are more level-headed, and you're probably up there on the list of people that I know that are, you know, calm and collected in these kind of events. Has that always been the case, or did you
not
like learn
always.
This over time?
Yeah, I think it kind of came with just experience and skill. I mean, I remember like my first few I would call them major outages. Like, man, like my stress was through the roof, but I probably hit it pretty well. So I didn't, you know, I don't go into like a sky is falling type of scenario. And, you know, I've been in plenty of scenarios where like people around me are like really freaked out. And like, they've actually commented like, well, how did you just kind of sit there and zone out? It's like, you know, I don't even know half the time. I kind of just, you know, do what I need to do and solve the problem and get through it. So I think, you know, so first off, thank you for that comment. I appreciate that. And, you know, like I said, I've met people that are quite the opposite, and like, you know, two little things can happen and it's like the whole day shuts down. It's like, well, you can't let little things bother you, because like, in my opinion, like stress will just like, you know, literally kill you. So,
yeah.
I wanted that issue of like my health being affected by some crazy amount of stress, because it's like, it is pretty dangerous in my opinion. So.
Yeah. It almost seems like to you, if there's a job to be done, you don't even think about the stress part. You're like, well, got to do the job first. And then like, after that's done, you're like, there's no need to think of the stress. It's all over.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I tell people, like, you know, like if we can get through it, like, yeah, it's going to suck for maybe a couple of weeks, but once we're on, like we can move on and on to the next one. And you know, luckily we have a very solid team that kind of has that same philosophy. And, you know, like I said, I've been a part of teams and scenarios where that's not the case. And they're usually more, you know, green type people, but you know, they eventually learn these things too. So kind of coaching along the way, you know, like we've had scenarios where, you know, people have called me like in just sheer utter and terrified panic. And it's like, okay, wow, like this is a bad scenario. But you know, your goal is to kind of calm them down, get the right people engaged as a leader and help kind of remove obstacles and move the thing forward and, you know, de-escalate the situation. So it's I don't know. I think it's something that kind of you kind of learn with experience, and you can't like learn it like in a class or school, because you'll never understand like the real life stress around you until it kind of happens to you almost.
Yeah. That's it's definitely not something that school doesn't teach you how to manage stress.
Definitely not. I've never had a class like stress 101 other than real life training.
Yeah. I think you'll appreciate this story. So this is one actually my dad told me back when he was just starting IT in the 90s. So this is when you had to back things up on tape. See, I didn't really know what that was, but
there you go.
You have to back things up on tape. And his boss told him that every night at midnight, like this tape needs to be replaced. Like that is your job. If that doesn't happen, then you're out. Like you need to do it. And so he went on a date one night and forgot. And they went to the movies. And it was 10:30 p.m. He gets up from the movie and says, I have to go, and gets out and just goes straight to the office. And like by the time it was midnight, it was back. And then he went back to the movies like, I hope she's still there. And she was. And that turned out to be my mom. And I wouldn't be here if she had left.
That's funny. That's a really good story. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, people will if they take their job seriously, they're going to kind of want to do these things. And some people probably wouldn't do that. And that could very well be a RGE if it wasn't for those tapes.
Yeah.
Something would have happened and they had to restore it from that backup, then that's a bad scenario for sure. So we see that happen quite a lot, actually. So
what's like a modern equivalent of that? Like, is there anything in security that you have to do every single time or else?
Yeah, it actually, you know, backups to this day is still something that people sadly don't always do, and they don't always actually test those backups. So whether it's a tape or kind of a more modern, you know, cloud-based system, that's actually probably like a top three thing that you should be doing is those backups and testing the backups. Because I can't tell you how many times I ask somebody, like, oh, do you have a backup? And they say, yeah. It's like, okay, well, then I ask them, when did you last test it? And they kind of give me this, well, I'm like, okay, that means never. Like, you don't know it works. So
if you don't
actually like test it, you don't know it works. And if you're in a situation where you need it, that's like having a car in your driveway and like never starting it. And you're like, well, I have a battery in it. It's like, okay, well, does it start? Maybe. Well, then what good's the car, you know, type of a thing. So
yeah,
same thing there.
That's a good analogy. Now, okay. You said that this was one of the top three things that people could be doing. What is something for the people listening out there, what is like the easiest things that they can do to become more secure?
Yeah. If we're talking for like, you know, like the average consumer,
yeah,
you know,
kind of home user. Person, yeah.
Yeah. Really, I would say a couple things, right? You know, like backing up like your files, whether it's like your pictures, your email, things like that, you know, updating your systems, you know, so like if you have an Apple phone, updating the OS, updating the apps, you know, Windows, same thing, Mac, doesn't really matter. Constantly doing those updates. And then third, I would say use like a password manager. So you can have, you know, these like nice, clean, unique passwords for your email, your banking. And then kind of like a sub bullet to that would be something called multi-factor authentication. So like you might have an example where, hey, like you log into your bank wants to send you a code to your phone. You punch in that 6-digit code. It's another way of showing that, hey, this is Armand. I'm actually logging into my bank. It's me. I trust me. So if your devices support that, then definitely turn those features on.
Yeah. MFA, very important. Password manager, like LastPass. Yep. That's the one I use. Probably the most, like not just for security because it generates passwords for you, but for like ease of remembering things. Like I forget my, if I have a different password for things, I'm going to forget. All you have to do, copy, paste, throw it in there, done. Like it's so easy. Yeah. Highly recommend something like that.
Totally agree.
That'd be great. All right. So talked a little bit about what you do and so a little bit about stress, but do you have any, like a daily routine or any habits that you follow every day?
Yeah. So probably not maybe every day. It's more like on a weekly thing. So, you know, I've been really kind of the last maybe 8 to 10 months, really diligent again about getting back into working out, kind of focusing on my health first. So, you know, working with like a trainer, and just really kind of focusing on getting myself back into shape because I've been a big believer that, you know, if I have the energy throughout the day, I can be more focused for my job and, you know, helping people remove these obstacles, help customers, you know, just have more energy. You know, I can kind of essentially go longer in the day, you know, less prone to things bugging me and stressful because I can just go kind of quote unquote, sweat it out, work it out, you know, feel really good about things like that. So, you know, on a day-to-day kind of weekly thing, you know, I have my little routine. I do it first thing in the morning. I know some people say like, oh, you should do it later in the evening or as a reward to yourself. Great. You know, that might work for you. But for me, I get up, I do it first thing in the morning. Especially Monday, like I do it first thing Monday morning at like, you know, 7 a.m. Yeah. By 8 a.m. I'm done. And I'm just like super pumped up for the week to, you know, like hit Monday hard. So it always kind of intrigues me when people are like, oh, it's Monday again. They're dragging, they're hungover or whatever. And they're just like they want things to, you know, continue as a party mode, but you know, hey, I'm ready to rock and roll and let's go talk to customers. Let's go solve problems and, you know, help better secure people. So I love it.
Dude, you're jacking me up. I wish it was Monday right now.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I'm getting ready for the day. No, I totally agree with the morning gym. I am a big team morning gym person. I don't know. I've never heard reward yourself at the end of the day with the gym. I like end of the day, it's not happening. I don't like when it's crowded. It's just a hassle.
Defeats the purpose.
Like, yeah, I like to be in that morning mindset. Either way, I'd be tired, right? If I wake up and go to the gym or if I go after work, either way, up there, like my clearest hours are like around lunchtime. But I so much prefer starting the day like with that clarity of the gym than ending it. Like, what are you going to do with all that energy? You know, you just got pumped up. Like, now yep. What?
Totally agree. Yeah, just get it done in the morning. You know, like it kind of sets the routine because like if I'm like held accountable, I say, okay, look, you know, like if my alarm goes off, I get up, I go and I make it to the gym. That's like a huge kind of quote unquote win for the day.
Yeah.
It totally sets your mind up for saying, hey, you know what? I've already had one win. Let me just keep going. So I'm also a big believer that if you can say no to one thing, it's easier to say no to other things throughout the day. Like, oh, you know, like maybe I should eat, like maybe I shouldn't eat this thing that's bad for me. Ah, who cares? Fine. I'm going to have it anyway. You know, but if you kind of have this mindset of like building the, you know, like, hey, I'm on track. I did this. Yes, yes, yes. For me personally, it puts me in a way better mindset. I'm more relaxed and kind of calm and focused and I can get way more work done, like, you know, heavy thinking type work that I need to get done. So
have you read Atomic Habits?
I have actually. Yeah. So yeah. That's a great book. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That exactly reminded me of the like that flow chart they has, like the first yes of the day kind of sets you up for the other yeses versus the first no. I've always thought that for me, to anyone that has trouble getting up on the first alarm, the biggest thing that's worked is knowing exactly what you're going to do when you wake up. If I wake up, you know, the alarm hits at 7 o'clock. I know I'm going to the gym. I got my shoes by the door. Like you just make it as easy as possible for yourself to just get out of bed, you know, brush your teeth and then go to the gym. Like
Yeah.
Know what you're doing and you're done.
The more you can prep the night before or even like the week before. So another thing I do is like on Sundays, I'll usually prepare for like my week coming up. So whether it's personal stuff, work stuff, I'll look at, hey, do I have any like personal commitments, like, you know, dinners, family stuff? What do I have work commitments? Do I have any customer meetings? Is there anything I need to wear, you know, differently or, you know, dress up differently? You know, do I have anything I have to be on site for, traffic? Just kind of really plan my week out on Sunday so that I can, you know, again, Monday morning, it's like, yeah, let's do this. You know, let's just go, baby, and rock and roll.
Yeah, there's nothing like showing up to the office and getting spooked with a big meeting on a Monday morning.
Yeah, like you don't want any surprises, right? I mean, we have plenty of surprises and, you know, like your brains work overtime anyway. So, but the less I have to worry about thinking about something like that, then, you know, I can focus on something else. So.
Yeah, cybersecurity is one massive surprise as it is. You don't need work coming in like
checking my news articles to see, you know, like what's happening in the industry and, you know, my little podcast I kind of listen to on the side, you know, every day to kind of get news updates.
Yeah.
Just stay up to date because, you know, like these things happen and sometimes companies get breached in the middle of the night and you're just finding out like the next morning and it's like, whoa, okay, you know, so that's what I'm going to deal with today.
Yeah. I remember the one big breach that we had this earlier this year from a security company. There was, it's like every day you got a different account of what happened.
And yeah.
Sure, keeping up with that was interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes people kind of falter on that, you know, like when they do have a, let's just say a cyber event, they sometimes don't know how to handle the breach, meaning like when to communicate, what to communicate. Sometimes more is better. Sometimes less is more. Sometimes saying too much too often can be kind of backfiring. So
yeah,
that's a whole other side of things that people don't realize is sometimes actually how to handle these breaches is just as important as solving the breach itself and getting back online, so to speak.
Is there a law that says what you have to say, or are they, I think I remember reading they're like either have legislature talking about what you have to disclose, or is there anything like
that? It kind of depends, you know, based on like if you're publicly traded or private, you know, what you have obligations for. If you're in certain industries, like, you know, like healthcare, you know, financial sector, are different disclosures sometimes, but there's not really one kind of concrete overseeing body for that. So sometimes people can really botch that up if they're left to their own devices sometimes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And sometimes people don't say anything at all and they try to hide it. And that's almost worse in some cases. So we've seen that.
When does nothing at all help you?
I guess when you
get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that have had breaches and they kind of sweep it under the rug and they've been able to contain it. But for the most part, you know, things do get out. And, you know, some of these cyber gangs actually will call the employees, they'll call the investors and say, hey, I have your data, you've been breached. Talk to your CEO, and it kind of freaks them out. So they have their ways of digital extortion, if you will, which is pretty wild in itself.
Yeah. What blows my mind about these gangs is that it is their job. Like the funny thing we talked about in the past was the one cyber gang that they were negotiating on a Friday and then got back on a Monday. Like they took the weekend off. They were going 9 to 5. Like this is their 9 to 5 job. It's insane to me that's a option.
Yeah, it was 100% true. You know, we were working through a scenario with somebody and, you know, kind of going back and forth, and then, you know, around, you know, 5 p.m. in their time zone, essentially, they kind of went quiet and you know, we're kind of joking saying, well, like it's basically Friday at 5. So they're done, and they didn't come back till Monday morning their time. So yeah, like these things do happen and people treat it like a legit business, just criminally legit business. So
yeah,
pretty wild.
That is wild. Speaking of wild, let's get down to your hobby. And I think this is probably another reason why I see you as so level-headed, because what you do in your free time is so crazy and fast paced that anyone who can stay calm for this is nuts. But Derek races cars. He's a race car driver, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah. It's been a pretty serious hobby of mine for the last couple of years. I've been, you know, driving on tracks since probably 2012, you know, off and on, and then got like really competitive with it, I don't know, probably 4 to 5-ish years ago. And to your point, you know, I pretty much race once a month on the track. You know, I'm doing wheel-to-wheel racing with a enclosed car. You know, sometimes on the track with 40 other drivers, sometimes different classes. That means sometimes cars are faster or slower. And I've done endurance racing, up to 6 hour type endurance racing, nighttime rain, crazy thunderstorms, all while racing at night, wheel to wheel at 100 plus miles an hour. So definitely a crazy thing I do, but I'd love it. Would not change it for anything.
How did you get started in this in the first place? Were you like someone who as a kid loved watching like the Indy 500 and stuff, or did you just start driving, going fast and went, I think I could go faster?
No, I think according to my parents, I've always been like into cars. So like even as a kid, it was like Hot Wheels. And then actually in my family, like through like my kind of great uncle and grandpa side of things, they used to do dirt bike racing and used to actually be into racing itself. Really? So actually kind of like it is like in the family, and it maybe skipped a generation or two and it just kind of hit me. And when I was a teenager, I actually was racing RC cars. So I did that professionally for a couple of years. I traveled across the country. Yeah. I was sponsored, and this was back in like the late mid-90s. So that was a lot of fun too. And it taught me a lot about kind of like mechanical engineering, like the physics of kind of how cars work. And like, you'd be surprised how complicated and high tech these cars were even back then. And then, kind of grew out of that and then got into, real racing after I got one of my dream cars back in 2011. It was way too fast for the street and way too powerful. And I was like, I'm going to try taking to like an autocross, which is a way people kind of start getting into hyper performance, where you go to like a coned off kind of parking lot. You kind of have like this course you do, and you do it based on time. And it was fun, but it was very short. You're driving for like, say, 30 seconds, and you're standing around for like a couple hours to wait again. You're like, well, this is cool, but like, I want more. And then I took out the car. I did like what they call like a high performance driving day, where you actually go on the track. I had no idea what I was doing, but you have a coach with you and you kind of like walk through everything the first times. And after that, I was just hooked. And then it became like a downhill slope, so to speak. So I wanted to go all the time. And then it became, okay, well, let's modify the car. Let's buy different tires. And then it got to a point where I was doing it so much, I said, okay, like now is the time to get to like a serious, like professional built car, or dedicated car, I should say, for safety reasons and things like that. I saw some pretty bad accidents. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be involved in this with like myself or my street car, so to speak. I want to be able to drive home. So then it became building a dedicated track car. And then from there, it's been, club racing, amateur racing ever since. So yeah.
What kind of car was your dream car that you first started on, and what kind do you race with now, like the dedicated?
Yeah. So the dream car at the time was a 2011 BMW M3 Coupe. I was super happy to be able to get that car. I ordered it brand new from Germany, so I got to custom build it how I wanted. It came with the exact color I wanted, every feature, every option. And when it was delivered with like 4 miles on the car, which is pretty cool. Like, you never see that kind of stuff. And to this day, I still have that car. I'll probably never sell it. I love it way too much. And then coincidentally enough, the car I ended up building is something called a spec BMW E46, which is based on a BMW chassis, a little bit older than the one I have, from like a 2001, 2003-ish era. And what's kind of cool about this class is the people that race it, they're all built relatively close to the same. So we have guidelines that say, hey, everyone runs the same spinning, the same tires, the same wheels. So the goal is to make it as close as possible in the car, so the racing is in theory closer, tighter, more fun. And it's a blast. So I race with some really, really good guys, and it's a good group of guys. And it's a good way to blow off a lot of stress and things like that.
I bet that you're not thinking about anything when you're going that fast with that many people.
Not at all.
Like, no. you are thinking, how do I get first place alive?
Yeah. You're definitely not worried about work or cybersecurity or who got breached. And you kind of like, it's kind of weird. Like, once you put the helmet on, so to speak, you kind of really just kind of zone out and get in the right mindset to go, 100 plus miles an hour, inches from each other, wheel to wheel, racing for 35 minutes straight at a very, very fast pace. And trusting your other driver and coming out safe and having a fantastic time. So that's what it's all about.
You guys ever hang out after? Like, are you all homies?
Get a beer or something? Yeah, we have plenty of get together, after hours at the track. And we all have our own kind of like, messaging threads where we do and kind of, jokingly talk trash on each other and things like that. So it's a really good group of guys, and so it's a little community. And most what's cool is, everyone's at a point where they're more than willing to help you out. So if there's a situation nice. Where, hey, you need someone to help you fix your car or move it or help load stuff up, like you're always willing to kind of help, or, you know, people offer up food and things like that. So it's like a traveling, you know, second group of friends and family almost with some of these people. So it's a really, really awesome time.
Yeah. It sounds like its own neat community that you guys have going on.
Definitely is. And you meet a wide range of people. That's for sure. You know, like people from all walks of life and backgrounds. And you'd be surprised to meet a lot of IT people of all things, actually. So you never know when it kind of comes up.
So you mentioned your 2011 dream car. What's 2022 Derek's dream car of all time?
Yeah, the car I still haven't gotten yet. I've gotten close is a Porsche GT3. So to be fair, I do have a Porsche 911, but not quite a GT3 yet. So that one's still on my list. They're very hard to get. The pricing is kind of insane right now. So we'll see, maybe in a few years, but that one's on top of the list right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Have you ever been in an accident? I forget.
I have actually. So I've been in a pretty, you know, couple like, you know, small little contact ones. And then yeah. Two seasons ago, I was actually in a pretty bad crash doing an endurance race. It was a nighttime race, really kind of dangerous track already because it's very dusty. So when people go off or put two in the dirt, as they say, it kicks up a lot of dust. And I was going through a very fast section of the track. It was super dusty. It's kind of like driving through snow. Like you can't see more than 2 feet in front of you. And you're going at a very, very fast pace. So I kind of turned where I should have turned or thought I should have turned. Ended up going off the track, and actually four cars were involved in this accident.
Wow.
I ended up spinning. Once I kind of realized, hey, like I stopped the car and I realized the first thing you gotta do is like, you just figure out where you are. Like, are you on track or off track? And yeah. Once I realized I was on the track, I immediately looked to my left and I see headlights coming at me. And I was like, okay, so I couldn't really move in time. And luckily that car swerved just a little bit to the right. And he basically T-boned my entire left half of the car. And
wow.
That spun me back around, I don't know, at least once or twice back off the track, you know, but safety gear works and I was all buckled up, buttoned in, and there's, you know, no damage to me other than a couple little bruises and marks and bruised ego. You know, the car had some significant damage to that, but it's a testament to our safety gear and like the rigorous test cages go through. And like, so even though it was, you know, not a fun event, I feel pretty safe out there when you're racing wheel to wheel, probably more so than driving on like the freeway, to be honest, because people don't pay attention out there at all. Yeah. So yeah.
No one's texting when they're racing. At least I hope.
No, because you can't move your hands that much. So you're pretty much buttoned in and you're rocking and rolling.
Yeah. It's like cybersecurity. The risk's never going to be zero, but you want to reduce the impact of that risk as much as possible. It seems like these cars are built really safe and you're a testament to that. It sounds like any other day that'd be a horrible accident to get in, but here you are, yeah. A couple scrapes out of the way.
Yeah, if it was a street car, it'd be a lot different situation. You know, like full airbags would have been deployed, yeah. And it would have been a pretty bad crash. But in a purpose-built race car, you know, you have like a fire system, you have these massive 6-point belts, you have these things to restrict your neck, you have the giant seat that pretty much hold you in place, you have roll bars. You know, safety is very big, and you know, these cars go through a lot of inspection process to do that. So it's a testament to the sport in general and how well they can safetify these cars out there.
Yeah. And what was going on in your head when you first started spinning?
The first thing I thought was like, man, like I hope I don't land on the track. Like that was literally it. and I hope I stay off the track. And then once I realized I was on the track, I was like, oh, this isn't good. And then I mean, it happened within probably, you know, maybe a second, right? It was a very fast event, but it's not enough time to get yourself off the track. And then, you know, you have to kind of radio like your team saying, hey, I was involved in an accident. Like I'm fine. I'm safe, but you know, I'm stuck out here. So at that point you're waiting for the actual, you know, marshals, if you will, or safety crew to yeah. come out until you back off and things like that. And going back to that accident, four cars involved. The other car that was actually in front of me, he got hit almost dead nuts, like back from like the actual tail end, and it pushed the whole trunk almost all the way forward to his roll cage. And he got out very slow moving, had to go to a stretcher. They had to pull him off. Ooh. He was fine, but it was a much more hard impact for that person than for me. So having to watch that was a little bit like, wow, like this is a little bit scary out there, but It just, again, shows that at the end of the day, no one was seriously hurt and everyone was able to, you know, race the next day, so to speak, minus the car.
Do people ever start dishing blame for something like that? Like, this sounds like an accident, like a freak accident. But yeah. was he like, damn you, Derek?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that sometimes, you know, like that's why we all have to wear cameras and, you know, kind of a
like
who's at fault type of a thing. But sometimes these things happen and, you know, that's kind of like the cost of racing sometimes. So you have to be able to kind of, unfortunately, say like if something happens, be able to kind of walk away from like the car if you total it. So like there's no concept of insurance out here. So it's it can be a very expensive mistake or, you know, hobby sometimes. And, you know, those are kind of things that can play into it. But for the most part, those things don't really happen too often. It's more, you know, gentle rubbing happens once in a while. But for the most part, the groups take a lot of pride in driving, you know, super, super clean, if you will.
Yeah, and these cars ain't cheap. So I can imagine that the cameras really are good when it comes to like insurance purposes or anything like that.
Yeah, yep, exactly. It's more, you know, from a safety standpoint and not really like a, you know, like he said, you said type of a thing, but, you know, just to kind of have it. Plus it makes for great video to show people and show them like how close the racing can really be sometimes and like how much fun it can really be out there.
Yeah, you were showing me a video earlier today. I'll definitely throw a link in the show notes to the YouTube because I
absolutely
my heart was pumping when I saw that. Like that looked like so much fun.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool. It was like for our group, we do standing starts, so it's a little bit even different. So it can make the starts much more intense, if you will, because you're going from zero to just all in, and I mean, literally anything can happen. People can stall. People can, you know, swerve off track and, you know, miss things. So, you know, I've had them work in my favor and sometimes not work in my favor, but just adds to the whole excitement of it all.
I can imagine if the person in front of you stalls as you're jumping to like 60, that's not good.
To swerve really quickly and hope you don't clip the person in front of you. And if it happens to you, cause I've stalled before and you hope the person behind you doesn't cream you. So, it's wild.
Which only adds to the stress of you stalling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny. So like, you know, even like if, I've been through like IT events and cybersecurity events and like, yeah, like your stress gets pretty high, but I think it's my heart pumping, like stuff like that. Like it's like probably 10 times off the chart. And I think at one point I was wearing like an Apple Watch and probably said like, hey, are you having a heart attack? You know, type of a thing, but I don't really do that anymore.
You don't want the Apple Watch there for that. I
freaked it out.
This goes down to like the most, you know, basic needs of survival. Like that's it. Like you're playing with your life there, but in a, I mean, in a controlled environment, don't get me wrong. Like they take as much ways to minimize the risk, but still you are playing with your life. And I'm guessing your heart can't tell the difference when you look in the rearview mirror after stalling, what's going to happen, how safe you are or not.
Yeah, the good news is for the most part, once you kind of get going, at least for me, I can speak for myself, like once I kind of get past that first, you know, few seconds of the race and like we're underway, then I usually feel way more calm and relaxed and collected and cool. So it's just that initial like, hey, green flag drops, like if you're just like all eyes on you, everything's pumping and then boom, off to the races, literally.
Yeah, that's so sweet. Now, I know you've also got the Airbnb thing going on out in Florida. How's that going?
Yep. It's been interesting. So kind of started this process, you know, a few months ago, ended up getting the house around January timeframe, spent a lot of time finding the right property, getting it furnished, going through all the, let's say the hoops of getting a license for Airbnb. They don't make it easy sometimes, you know, working with these cities and, but luckily we got some pretty cool people we work with in Florida that made it easy and what they look for the inspection. So we wanted to have everything buttoned up and tidy to make sure we were all legal before we went live. And then we went live with the platform and we got, I think, bookings within 24 hours of us being live on the platform. And it's been going really well. So it's another kind of a business venture, if you will, and you know, seeing how that goes. And like my wife and I take it very serious on giving that kind of a white glove experience to our guests and things like that. And you know, I think sometimes we overthink things and we put too much effort into things for people, but I'd rather have, you know, more than less. So, you know, it's been paying off pretty well and bookings are kind of rolling through and, it's been a learning experience to manage a property 3,000 miles away, right? So building a team was really key for that stuff. Yeah.
So you're a real estate mogul, race car driver, cybersecurity something like founder.
That. I know. You make me sound pretty good, Armand. I like it.
I'll start doing your intros from now on.
I love it.
Derek, did you ever expect yourself to be starting your own company? Like, is this something you thought of when you were younger, or did it just kind of happen?
It's kind of been through with me off and on through the years. So my dad was always very entrepreneurial. He had his own business for a long time. So I used to help him with that, you know, during the summer times when I was a kid, you know, doing some of the physical work. And I was like, man, like, this is kind of tough. I don't really like this. I better go figure something out to, like, you know, be a little easier, quote unquote. And then I kind of always been fascinated with computers and kind of, you know, engineering, if you will, and mechanically inclined. So I kind of took on, you know, computer networking, if you will, and ran with it from there. But I always had this idea of, like, you know, maybe starting my own venture, doing consulting. And then, you know, the timing kind of just worked out where I was at in my life with my other kind of company and where they were going and, like, what I saw the gaps were. And end up talking to a couple of people that were also thinking the same thing. We said, hey, look, let's just maybe talk about doing something together here as a joint venture. And we said, well, fine, let's just take the risk. And we went all in, and, you know, here we are. And I love, you know, I've learned more doing this than I ever have during any kind of school or, you know, reading through books or anytime YouTube videos or whatnot. So it's been a very eye-opening, rewarding experience for sure.
Yeah, here we are. I can only imagine seeing the growth of Trident Group, like the amount of just the change between your life and everything else in the past couple of years is probably felt like more than just five.
Yeah, it feels like it's probably 10, you know, with everything else going on, you know, like hair turning more gray and all that, but it's all good. But like I said, you know, I definitely wouldn't change anything. And, you know, I kind of have that, you know, like that so-called bug, I think, in me. And, you know, like, no matter what happens, I can see, you know, starting other businesses or ventures and things like that, or kind of continuing to go on my own. Like, I like having that control and controlling your own destiny, so to speak. But more importantly, like, I like seeing us being able to reward and, you know, provide jobs to people and see their, like, happiness. And, you know, like when we do our Christmas parties and other kind of events, and just, like, how happy everybody is, like, that's super ultra rewarding to me. So, like, I don't forget those things. And, you know, where we were even just a few years ago to now, it's that's very important for me to kind of, you know, think about the other people and not just try to, you know, be selfish here and, you know, build something for me. It's like, how do we build something for everybody and our customers and future customers out there?
Yeah, it's really important to be thinking about who you can help. And I think another thing that you seem to be good at, just picking up from this conversation, is your ability to spot the gaps. You've been good throughout the past of finding where there is a need and then figuring out how am I best suited to help that need. And that's a very important trait in all entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to be able to, you know, think outside the box and look for gaps and just really kind of solve those problems is really what a lot of people, you know, kind of do in these types of scenarios, right? And, you know, build the companies for the gap at hand, so to speak. And almost as saying, like, if you can build it, they'll come. And, you know, we've been fortunate based on, you know, like, my prior reputation and my partner's reputations of being, you know, I think in theory, good people to work with and good people to work for. We get a lot of great people that want to come work for us now, which is pretty rewarding and awesome. So seeing that kind of, you know, hard work and those seeds being planted from years ago, paying off and being able to kind of grow and hire more amazing talent and turn loose and just help those people in turn grow and just keep the cycle going.
Yeah. Good luck on continuing that growth, Derek.
I'm trying every day.
keep going. We got a couple quick questions and then I'll close it off here. But these are a little more fun ones. So Derek, what music have you been listening to lately? You got any song recommendations?
So I do. I like, I've always been kind of all over the map on music, but I've always liked, you know, techno, EDM type of a stuff, you know, even before it became super popular back in, like,
I actually, you know, the didn't mid-90s. Know that about you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I have, like, I don't know, I like a lot of, like, that kind of that type of music because I can listen to it while I work or study and it doesn't up with, like, lyrics. So it kind of just sits in the background. I can kind of just zone out to it. You know, stuff like that. But, you know, I love a good, you know, like EDM type song, or kind of, you know, modern stuff, or some like Jack Johnson radio if I'm chilling at the house and things like that, you know.
Something laid back.
Yep.
I got a TV recommendation or movie. Have you seen that Netflix show on the DJs? I can't remember what it's called. I'll send it over.
DJs? I have not, actually. I'm always looking for recommendations, though.
Yeah, it just came out. It's something because someone in my house was watching it. It's like the history of how DJing and EDM became what it is today. I think more DJing.
Oh, very cool.
But it was like it started back in the 80s or 90s, and I remember them talking like, it was just the DJ was in the corner. Like they were just there to turn tables, right, make the music, yeah, go. And then it showed that to like Calvin Harris and Avicii and like the actual music genre EDM going pop charts, like not just like festivals in EDM, but like
top 10 everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a really interesting documentary from what I saw. I'll send that over.
Oh, very cool.
And speaking of, do you have any shows or movie recommendations you got for the people?
Yeah, so I just saw Top Gun 2. I loved it.
Fantastic.
Back to being like 10 years old again. Like I was just super, super into it. Loved it. Great movie. TV shows, just wrapped up Ozarks, but man, fantastic show. Loved Ozarks. Kind of sad it's over now, but now I'm just waiting for Stranger Things and then that's it right now. So yeah.
That's good. Those are some heavy hitters. Top Gun Maverick was the first movie in my adult life where I was like, damn, I would pay to watch that again. That was really good.
Yeah, I've probably seen Top Gun as a kid, like, I mean, hundreds of times, like so much so it was on VHS and DVD. I've watched that movie countless times. And so like to see it and how well they kind of brought it back was really amazing. So I loved it personally.
I think they did a fantastic job of rebooting that movie. Like I was so going into it expecting this to be like really corny, really just like... like almost cringe, but no, that like I very, very rarely does a sequel to a movie that big live up to it. And I really thought it did.
Yeah. Great movie.
And are you reading any books right now?
Right now, let's see. I do actually have,
I see that library back
there. I know. I'll grab one here. It's a little bit older. I haven't finished reading it yet, but Winning from Tim Grover is my next one on my list.
I'm
going through. So
nice. I actually
get a view. But
I was gonna say I picked that one up and his other book. I read the other one, but how's Winning?
I haven't started yet, so this is my next one up. I'm trying to do like one a month, one every 2 months. So I'm a little bit behind right now, but that's not something I'm trying to do better at. It's just, you know, read more and focus more on things like that. Even if I can learn one or two little things, it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's got a really interesting writing style. It's very just blunt and direct, but that's kind of what you expect from
I like his interviews. So like I've watched some of his interviews on YouTube with various podcasts and things like that. So very direct, and you know, I'm a big believer in like kind of coaches and mentors and things like that. So
and lastly, where can people find you?
Sure. So a couple ways. So we do like a cybersecurity podcast, you know, from the Trident Group Security Squad. So you can find us on YouTube there. I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn at D Pokoroba, probably more so LinkedIn from a business standpoint. Instagram is probably more so from the personal kind of car side of things. And then Twitter is a little bit here and there, like mix of both.
Nice. All right. I'll drop the links to all of that. And I was going to say the chat, but I don't have a chat. It's a podcast. I'll drop the links
in
the show notes below. Thanks for coming on, Derek.
Hold on. Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
You too.